You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all six Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc. What does this mean? On our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382 and answer the question, Issues Etc., what does this mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I think we remember carrying them around in grade school and junior high and high school. Now in college, many of them are online, but you still have to go in the bookstore and buy them. They're big, they're heavy. They are, well, are they bias? The books that we have to use when we go to school, the textbooks that form the basis of much of what we're learning, we are required to read them, take quizzes from them, take tests from them. They're a big part of our education. Who writes them? And do the newer editions, well, we know that the older editions were kind of moving in an odd direction, but do the newer editions show some sort of clear bias, especially against conservative ideas? Joining us to talk about that on this Tuesday afternoon, Joy Pullman. She's managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled New AP U.S. History Textbook Implies Christians Are Bigots, Reagan a Racist. Joy, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Do you think that parents are aware of what's in their kids' textbooks?
I wish I could say that I think they are, but I actually don't think that they are. Because what's in there is not only very often shocking, but also, you know, if parents really got a good handle on what their kids were learning and who are the sorts of people, you know, writing and training the people shaping their kids, then it would really confront them with some hard questions that would maybe have, you know, make them have to make some life choices that are difficult. So not only do, you know, life is busy, you know, I've got kids, parents have plenty of other things to do, you know, just to think about to take care of their kids in other ways. But beyond that sort of just life fog, there's also, again, if you learn the truth, then you have to, you are faced with the burden of handling the truth and dealing with it responsibly.
Who writes textbooks, especially history textbooks?
Well, typically committees, and it really depends on the textbook, but there's, you know, usually college professors or people who have advanced degrees and a variety of things. But nowadays, there's been a trend away from having textbooks have the specific name of the author, and they're just put out by a publishing house. And that takes away, that kind of takes away another layer of accountability for what is written and presented there, because, you know, you don't know who to pin it to. And so the committee writing process does that as well. So it's kind of a group effort, especially because what kids, the materials kids face in school is actually very, it's very bureaucratic. Oftentimes states control, you know, the materials they allow into the classrooms. And so in order, you know, to get a good review or get approved by the states to be sold within that state within public schools, you know, you have to go through process of committees, and there's rewriting, and there's, you know, so on and so forth. So it's a very opaque process that involves a lot of people. And so it's very hard to pin blame on, you know, someone and then, you know, fix the problem as a result.
So what was recently discovered and posted online from one of the largest textbook publishers found in a history textbook for the advanced placement courses?
A radio host in Indiana, my home state, posted pictures from a friend who was reviewing one of these, you know, schools get advanced copies of books that might be coming out so that they can buy them the instant, you know, they hit shelves, basically. And so the radio show host posted this online, and her friend had underlined some just extremely biased things that this textbook was printing as fact, or, you know, kind of couching in, say, you know, some people say that Ronald Reagan is a horrible person who never hired a woman in his life. Of course, I'm exaggerating for effect, but, you know, they include those sort of softeners, like some people think, and that's just basically a way of inserting bias while, again, avoiding responsibility for having done so. So, for example, a lot of the sections that were the most egregious talked about the 2016 election. So, I mean, I'm going to paraphrase here, but I'll try to be pretty close to the sense of the text. it straight up said that President Trump is a not very unobvious racist. And then it noted that his, you know, the cabinet that he had hired, never before had there been as many white males in the cabinet since Ronald Reagan's presidency. And, you know, then talked about the election, saying that the people who, you know, voted for President Trump were motivated by, you know, the fact that fewer people in America are Christians and that fewer of them are white people. Of course, implying that, you know, both religious and racial bigotry are motivating, you know, the millions of people, almost half the country, that voted for President Trump.
You say that this isn't just kind of propaganda, political propaganda, posing as straight history, but it is also a waste of time. Why do you say that?
That's right, because, you know, when I've talked to a number of parents about this, and to me it's just kind of, it's, you know, wow, I would never let that my kids encounter that, or if they did, you know, I would hopefully take some serious steps, not just, you know, think, oh, well, shucks, that's too bad. So when I talk to parents about this sort of thing, often they will kind of brush it off and say, oh, you know, well, it's an isolated incident, it's not happening in my school district. Or it's just a few paragraphs here and there, you know, I can talk to my kids about it, no biggie. But I think something that folks who are doing that, you know, taking that kind of attitude aren't thinking about is the fact that while their kids are learning things that are either not true or not useful or are cynical, you know, are biased, are slanted portrayals of reality, while their kids are, even if their kids can see through that, even while talking, you know, it through at home, what the kids are not doing, you know, that's occupying time that the children could have used to be learning something true, good, and beautiful. So it really, you know, kind of affects students in two ways. First of all, is by teaching them something that just isn't so and influencing their mind, and even if they reject it in subtle ways, it does have an effect. But second of all, of course, it's an opportunity cost. You know, that's like while the kids are learning falsehoods or, you know, cruel or uncharitable interpretations of the facts, they are not learning the truth. They are not learning something good. They're not filling themselves with what they should be doing in school, of course, which is getting a good education.
You classify this as a butterfly effect. What is that and why so?
Well, the butterfly effect was kind of popularized by one of those kind of macabre teen films a couple of years ago, but it's a description of a theory that says that very, very small things have very, very big effects over time or cumulatively. It's kind of like, you know, the tip of the iceberg sort of things. But my point in making that comparison is to say this isn't just, oh my goodness, a random shocking incident of what is happening. This sort of thing is pervasive throughout public education. I mean, and this has been made clear in studies over many, many decades. There have been lots and lots of studies showing, you know, over the years that the way that schools adopt textbooks leads them to be biased, it leads them to be boring, it leads them to be inaccurate. That's been pretty well documented for, you know, about 50 years now. But also, in this instance, we're talking about materials for a class called advanced placement. So these are high school classes that bright students tend to take, and that, well, if they do well on the test at the end of it, they can get college credit for it, so opt out of the college-level class on the same subject. So the company that owns and runs these advanced placement classes is called the College Board, and they also run the SAT, College Entrance Exam. So, but their guidelines for what students should be learning in these advanced U.S. history classes specifically call for this sort of slanted view of history. There have been they revamped it, their program for this a couple of years ago, and then there were academic analyses by, you know, professors who are well educated in the field on the conservative side who said, oh my goodness, you know, for example, you know, these don't say anything about James Madison. They don't say anything about Martin Luther King Jr. And then when they talk about history, they are pushing teachers and classroom materials to portray it in very Marxist terms about oppression and oppressors, you know, so this, you know, kind of battle between identity groups and minorities of various types. So you're learning kind of the social justice coloring of all of history. When that's totally out of place, especially in history, because that way of thinking is basically ahistorical. I mean, it only has been around for maybe about the past 50 to 100 years, depending on how you follow the philosophical movements. So the point being that this textbook is something that was specifically created in response to design asking for that kind of a textbook. And so it's no surprise if it's not a one-off. It's not a random instance of a rogue publisher. This is the biggest publisher in the world of education curriculum responding to, you know, the biggest curriculum purveyor in the U.S. of advanced class material, them saying this is what we want to give students, this kind of material, this biased material.
We'll talk more about that bigger framework here, laying aside the individual issues that may be right or wrong or omitted or highlighted in the U.S. history textbook. We'll talk about that bigger framework of oppressors and the oppressed with Joy Pullman on the other side of the break. We're talking about anti-conservative bias in U.S. history textbooks. She's managing editor of The Federalist.
Scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoj of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoj making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We're talking about anti-conservative bias in U.S. history textbooks. Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, is our guest. She's author of The Education Invasion, a recent column for The Federalist titled New AP U.S. History Textbook Implies Christians Are Bigots, Reagan a Racist. On the subject of education, Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree, and they'll waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Just click the Concordia University, Wisconsin online logo at issuesetc.org. Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin online. Joy, you were talking before the break about the framework. You said this isn't just a one-off. It isn't just an occasional omission or kind of propaganda statement in the history textbook. The big framework here, in fact, entire college courses, you can get a degree in this now. If you go into women's studies or other gender studies, your degree is essentially in this thesis. Group X is privileged. Group X oppresses group Y in order to reinforce its privilege. Fill in the blanks. You can get a degree in it at any college or university in the country now, and it seems to be kind of the constant drumbeat of these textbooks.
Right, and that's actually not just isolated to women's studies. That's kind of, you know, something that folks like us like to beat up on, and rightfully so, because it's anti-family, anti-all kinds of good things. But actually, the same sort of ways of thinking about the world are pervasive in especially the humanities departments, the English, the history, the philosophy, which is really a shame. I mean, I'm an English major. I love literature. There's a lot of good that can be had there, but almost none of it is happening when students study the discipline in so-called higher education in America. So the sort of grievance, the mongering, the victimhood, the oppression narratives, all of that is endemic to the fields of history and English and philosophy at the academic level, which is why, of course, it's trickling down into the classrooms because, you know, the same teachers who are teaching your kids English and history have been taught by professors in those fields. And, you know, over generations, that kind of saturation of those ideas gets only tighter because it's all, you know, the disciples of each generation, you know, extending on, their forebears' ideas and bringing them closer to their logical conclusions.
Okay, so here's an idea that I have when it comes to textbooks. And I think it's kind of practical as well as helpful in getting a little perspective. If you want to have your kids reading essays or material on, say, the 2016 presidential election, don't put it in a textbook. That's current events. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. So teach it in a current events class. Have the kids reading people from both sides of the issue. They're getting both sides. They can make up their own minds. The textbook should be written. They should lag when it comes to history by at least a decade so that there's time for thoughtful consideration, for a little perspective, for that guy to get out of office and for the animus against or the kind of hero worship for to die down. And then we can write some objective history based upon the facts rather than upon how we're feeling at the moment. What's your thought there?
Right. That's actually a really great point because if you think about it, you know, so we're in 2018. 2016 is 2 years ago. And recorded world history goes back something like, 5 to 10,000 years. So, you know, what happened 2 years ago is basically a drop in the ocean of what is available of human history to glean wisdom from. So, I mean, but actually that's another thing that is also endemic to the field is a very presentist focus. And I think it's because of the underlying progressivism in the field, there's been studies shown that, you know, teachers of quote-unquote history really love to focus on, you know, the 1960s forward. And again, because, you know, well, the 1960s were an era that really, you know, kind of broke the left out of a number of boxes into cultural supremacy. But also, you know, there's an idea within progressive thought that the kind of ideas that hold sway over our academy now that what is today is instantly better than what came before. You know, the past is problematic. So, you know, even, again, you know, you can see kind of something of an example in this and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's stances on same-sex, you know, affirmed government relationships, which would be, you know, just a couple of years ago, both of them were publicly against it. And then, you know, just, you know, in a couple of years, they completely switched their stance. So that's a big sea change in culture that happened just within a couple of years, and that kind of is an example of the way that what we're doing now, you know, in the progressive mindset is the most correct, the best. And so why would you want to hear anything about the bad old days when we could be looking forward to, you know, the utopia we're bringing today?
Do history textbooks adequately and accurately portray how religion has influenced people's motivations in the events of U.S. history?
Well, that's a really great question, and it actually relates specifically to the advanced placement courses because when the National Association of Scholars, which is an independent kind of association of university professors that just support basic American ideas that are now being shunted off, like free speech, you know, freedom of inquiry, attention to detail, and a focus on facts, so they did analyses of several of the College Board's history curricula. And so one of the major criticisms that they had of their European history program was specifically what you're talking about. I mean, if you think about European history, for example, majorly, majorly affected by Christianity. I mean, of course, all of the West and all of the world is. You know, but you really can't talk about European history since the Renaissance, or beyond that, but you can't talk about it without talking about Christianity. I mean, Christianity is specific points of doctrine are the cause of major wars, of major social changes, you know, of shifts in power. But regardless of that just basic fact, the College Board program on European history does precisely that, attempts to explain away people's religious beliefs as basically being, again, it's Marxist, being motivated by economics. So we don't believe in God because we really think he's there, you know, and that he's revealed himself to us in Christ and his word. We believe in God because, you know, our minds are too limited to be able to get through our harsh lives without some kind of mental crutch, because it's popular, you know, whatever other, you know, reasons. So that's kind of the way that the College Board treats religion's effect on human history, which is basically, you know, flat out, it's unacademic and preposterous, but that's what they do.
How important is the subject of history to our children's education?
Well, I think it's absolutely crucial. How can you call yourself an educated human being when you don't have any sense of the heritage, your own heritage? And, I mean, if you just look at it at a practical level, you cannot read anything with comprehension without having a good grasp of basic history, because language is itself a product of history. It's a product of cultural interaction. And so if you don't have any sense of history, you can't, you know, really be a functioning citizen just on that kind of basic practical level. But also, history helps you learn wisdom. You rather than, I mean, this is another reason, for example, parents are a great thing. People who have done bad things and good things and then can tell you about them, or you can learn about them, you know, through reading contemporaneous accounts, they help you learn what is good to do and what is not to do without you having to live all those millions of lifetimes yourself, or without you especially having to make terrible choices yourself and then having to live with the consequences. So a lack of historical instruction really deprives children of the accumulated wisdom of their ancestors.
Finally, with about 30 seconds here, what are concerned parents to do when the textbook is teaching their kids a revisionist form of U.S. history?
This is only a hard question to answer because the way that we educate kids is really tied up with a lot of other big decisions that families make and have often already locked in. So, for example, a big one would be, you know, housing size and location. There's a lot of funds and there's a school district tied up with that choice. And, you know, so if you are, and you know, so if you basically have some of your available money soaked up in your house, aka going to your local school district, it's going to tie you to go there more than you would if you were, you know, that housing money was free to, say, pay for your kids' private tuition, or for mom or dad to stay home and homeschool the kids, or for you and a couple of other parents to pool, you know, money together and hire a private tutor, or, you know, there's a growing thing in my town where, you know, homeschooling moms graduate their kids and then they take on a cottage class of other people's kids. So, I mean, that sort of thing is very doable. If people have, often if they have their financial, you know, their financial budgets arranged in a way to make it possible. So families often think that they can't, you know, make a choice like that I think is really rather necessary, you know, just typically because of the permeation of this and the stage that we're at in our culture, where it's not the 1950s anymore. And it's really, you know, again, it's not just one textbook. This is, you know, all the teachers have been educated this way. All the administrators have. The tests require kids to learn things in this frame of thinking in order to get good grades, so on and so forth. So I really think that the best and realest long-term solution to this is for families to start voting with their feet towards a kind of education that does not offer their kids garbage. So that really is my long-term answer.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled New AP U.S. History Textbook Implies Christians Are Bigots, Reagan a Racist. When you purchase The Education Invasion using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for The Education Invasion by Joy Pullman. Joy, thanks for being our guest.
Oh, thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the increased birth rates in Poland and the former Soviet Republic of Georgia with Lyman Stone. And we'll talk with John Daniel Davidson about the rise of moralizing by the American left. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.